for the hearing on the bill.
Good morning, everyone. We're going to go ahead and call the Senate Committee on Judiciary to order. Thank you very much for being here. We have three bills that are scheduled for public hearing and possible work session. I do want to state that on the record as we begin, 3093A, we are going to do the public hearing today. We have one amendment that was posted at 8 o'clock, which we'll take testimony on. There is going to be some other components based on leadership's decisions on both the House and Senate to use that to take care of a couple other areas that everyone has supposedly agreed to. And so we will not be working that bill today, but the other two will hopefully will be able to do the work sessions on those. So with that, what I want to do is go ahead and start off with House Bill 2357A. Open up a public hearing, and Jeff, can you give us an overview, please?
Chair Brzozinski and members of the committee, House Bill 2357A comes to us from the House Interim Committee on Judiciary. There's a minimal fiscal and no revenue impact on this bill, and it was unanimous in both the committee and floor on the House side. The bill modifies law enforcement defenses to crimes of unlawful possession of firearms and possession of a firearm or dangerous weapon in a public building or court facility. It provides law enforcement with protections afforded to concealed handgun license holders. The bill applies to both honorably retired and off-duty police officers. It specifies that the bill only applies to parole and probation officers acting within the scope of their employment. It declares an emergency and is effective on passage. The bill also allows honorably retired police officers to cast an artificial light from a vehicle while in immediate presence of a firearm or bow and arrow, and permits the law enforcement to operate a snowmobile and all-terrain vehicle with a loaded firearm or a bow and arrow.
All right, thank you. So I have three individuals that are signed up at the least at this point. Mike Iowa, hopefully I'm not doing too much on that bad. Jeff, why don't you come on up, and then Mike Savagio. While those three individuals are coming forward, is there anyone else who will want to give testimony today on House Bill 2357A? Thank you very much for being here. Whoever would like to start.
Good morning, Chair Brzozinski, members of the committee. My name is Michael Ewy. I'm the Oregon State Police Association Vice President, here today in support of House Bill 2357A. Current law prohibits carrying a firearm in various locations, but includes exemptions for officers while they are acting within the scope of their employment. The language is vague and has been inconsistently enforced across the state. Furthermore, ambiguity exists with honorably retired police officers carrying concealed, even with H.R. 218, the Law Enforcement Officer Safety Act of 2004. Police officers are charged with protecting the public and enforcing law, and they take this responsibility seriously, whether they're on duty or off duty. Many of our members feel responsible for carrying a concealed weapon with them at all times, citing for personal safety. Honorably retired officers have served their communities and have earned the privilege to carry a firearm concealed without obtaining an Oregon concealed weapons permit. Retired officers have demonstrated firearm safety and diligence in terms of firearms, so they understand the responsibilities associated with carrying a concealed handgun. Our organization and members support the a clarification of the current law through House Bill 2357A, which states that an off-duty officer can legally carry their weapon in public and honorably retired officers can carry it concealed. Police officers, past and present, are trained in using their weapons judiciously and with the highest regard for safety. House Bill 2357A fills the gap within current law and without question is a common-sense approach for Oregon law enforcement officers. Thank you.
Thanks. And let's see, who would like to go next, Jeff, or?
I will.
Okay.
Good morning, Chair Brzozinski, members of the committee. My name is Jeff Leedy. I am a retired Oregon State Police senior trooper. I was an OSP firearms instructor, a SWAT team member and instructor. I am a current HR 218 instructor certified by DPSST, an Oregon concealed carry instructor, and a certified pistol instructor. And I am here as a retired law enforcement officer. I believe that even the smallest police agency in the United States, and I've dealt with a lot of them, provides training far beyond what the average concealed weapons permit holder has. One does not reach retirement from law enforcement without remaining qualified with their firearm or without receiving continuous training on all law enforcement topics. Couple that with 25 plus years of experience and you reach a level that few, if any, could obtain outside law enforcement. I have an acquaintance. He's a concealed carry permit holder. He is a talented marksman and is an expert with firearms. Given all that I know about him, if I needed help in a critical situation, could choose between him or any retired police officer, I was choosing the retired cop every time. I trust my friend, but he's never had the training or experience that 25 years in law enforcement provides. Retired law enforcement officers are an asset, not a liability. We are not requesting police powers. We only ask that our training and years of experience be valued and recognized by the state of Oregon. Thank you very much.
All right, thank you. Mike?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Michael Salvaggio here speaking for the Oregon Coalition of Police and Sheriffs. At the risk of being redundant, I'll just quickly say that we believe that officers are held to professional standards and have the benefit of ongoing training and qualification regardless of whether they're on duty or off duty. It makes enormous sense to have this clarification passed so that off-duty officers as well as on-duty officers have the ability to carry in various circumstances. And I'll just leave it at that.
All right, thank you. Questions for anyone on the panel?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Burdick.
So if an honorably retired officer, and I agree with you about the training, if they commit a crime after their retirement that would normally prohibit them from having concealed handgun license, do you think they should still be able to have this exemption?
No.
But I don't, Mr. Chair, I don't see anything in this bill that would provide any kind of mechanism for determining whether a retired officer committed a crime.
Maybe Jeff can go over this. My understanding, though, is that if a person comes up on those type of charges, their license or permit they have is actually revocable. And also they have to range qualifications. I forget if it's every 2 years.
Chair Przanski, member of the committees, H.R. 218 requires an annual qualification. But also to address your concern, if there was an incident, and I'm speaking as a former police officer, but if there was an incident, you know, that involved a use of force with anybody, any reputable police agency, and I can't think of one who wouldn't do a background on that subject. I don't care who you are. They're going to do a background investigation on that particular person. If they find that there was a crime committed that would prohibit that person from carrying a firearm, such as domestic abuse, things like that, that's going to come up.
So.
We got one more. Mike.
Chair Przanski, members of the committee, just to follow up on that. H.R. 218 has very specific language with what retirees have to maintain. Part of that is that they are in good standing. So they need to qualify. They have to have an ID card. They have to be in good standing. So if an officer, retired officer, were to go rogue and do something wrong where they cannot maintain a weapon, they would no longer be in good standing with the department, and therefore that card would be revoked.
Okay, Mr. Chair, this is what I was trying to get at, because I did understand.
Could you move your mic down? I just want to make sure it actually gets on.
Okay. Because I did understand there was some kind of a nationally required card for retired officers to have. And so would this bill require them to have that card? Because the way I read it, it's just all they have to do is be retired honorably.
Chair Przanski, members of the committee, there is a card, and it's actually the act itself, so it'd be the entire name. It's a mouthful if you're going to put it on a card, but that card is supposed to be issued by the department that's authorizing them to carry while they are retired. So it will affect all police agencies in the respect that they're going to have to issue retiree ID cards, verify, yes, they do plan, and it's a personal choice, yes, they do plan to carry concealed, and if they do that, then they're going to have to make sure that they can get qualified, at least on an annual basis, and then everything else comes into play. Are they in good standing? Those types of things, which is clearly spelled out in H.R. 218.
Okay, so Mr. Chair, maybe we could, because this is kind of news to me that there is some kind of a regular qualification process that goes to carry one of these cards. And so is it your intent to have only those officers, only those retired officers that qualify and maintain this card covered by this bill?
Chair Przanski, members of the committee, I can't address that, but what I can say is as far as H.R. 218 is concerned, which I am an instructor of, agencies in the state of Oregon treat this differently. Some support it, some do not. Some provide the training or the access to the training. Some do not. My agency does not. I put on the training. I went and got qualified on my own to actually instruct this so that our retirees could take advantage of H.R. 218.
So H.R. 218, that sounds like a federal...
It is a federal, excuse me.
Federal law.
It is a federal.
Could you tell us a little bit more about what that law is?
Well, Chair Przanski, members of the committee, Senator Burdick, that law actually allows retired police officers nationwide to carry concealed in 50 states. However, they, with a lot of federal laws, they put a lot of requirements on the state to enact it and actually conduct the training. Each agency does. Each agency is required to each agency can issue a permit. Some agencies do. Some agencies allow their retirees to come in and shoot and take that training at the same time they're conducting training. OSP does not. I don't know that there are other agencies. I just know that OSP does not. That's why I do it. And other members like me that are retired firearms instructors. We went and got certified to DPSST. So they're not required to do it. They just can do it.
So Mr. Chair, it sounds to me like if you qualify under the federal H.R. 218.
Correct.
That you really don't need this bill, that you're already cleared to carry. Is that correct?
Chair Przanski, members of the committee, that is correct. However, there are some agencies that don't participate in the program.
So that means, I guess I don't understand what that means, that they don't participate. If they're allowed to do it under federal law, why would an agency participation make any difference?
Because at that point, there's many agencies provide the training for their retirees and the opportunity to go shoot. Some don't. So unless they have a cadre of instructors that are willing to go out and do this and then find a range to do it on, which is very difficult, they don't have to participate. They don't have to issue that card.
Oh, I see. I see. So what you're trying to do, Mr. Chairman, if I can follow up, what you're trying to do is cover retired officers that wouldn't normally be able to get one of these cards, to write them into the law with no training requirements, it sounds like.
That, or just treat them like any other concealed weapons permit holder in the state of Oregon. The police officer's training is far beyond that can even be obtained by a private person getting a concealed weapons permit. To get a concealed weapons permit in Oregon takes about a 3-hour class, pay a little money, and you can go get it.
We are aware of that.
I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm just saying that a police officer, after he's honorably retired, has received more training, physical training in the art of shooting, use of force, everything else that goes along with a police officer, that the private person couldn't possibly obtain.
No, and I understand that, and I have no problem with off-duty officers, certainly, but what I'm trying to get at is the people who have this card have a regular system of having to renew the card and show that their training is staying up to date, but people without the card, there's no training requirement and there's no regular background check requirement, it sounds like.
Well, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, a retired officer could go and get a concealed weapons permit.
Chair Przanski, member of the committee, that's correct. In fact, before I started teaching concealed carry classes, I actually attended several and got my Clackamas County permit just because I wanted to go through the process, see what it was like. And you can obtain all you want.
Yeah, and so this process that we're talking about today is really for those individuals who are retired officers who have gone through all this training. They are recognized for everything they've done, and they, with the H.R. 218,
yes, sir,
are able to basically do this without getting a concealed weapons permit through the normal course that most citizens would be required to do.
Chair Przanski, members of the committee, that's correct.
And, of course, there are the training refresher, because I'm on one of the retiree postings for EPD, and they annually, I couldn't remember if it was every other year or not, but annually they have a time set for retirees to come out to the range and requalify for that. So, I mean, this is a process that there's basically, instead of requiring someone, and I mean, the reality is it's easier to get the concealed weapons permit, but this is a kind of a understanding and convenience that when these people have retired in good standing and they're staying in good standing, they're going to be recognized for that, and they can actually have the same authority that they would go through in getting just doing the three-hour course. But here they're actually doing live fire requalification, just like if they were still out on the street. That's my understanding.
Chair Przanski, members of the committee, that essentially that's correct. But you brought up a good example of EPD. They publish it to their retirees that this is the date you can come and shoot. Many agencies don't do it. Like the largest agency in the state does not do that. So.
Okay. Other questions? All right, gentlemen, thank you very much.
Thank you.
I think some people may have come in the room while we were having this discussion. Is there anyone else who wanted to give testimony today on House Bill 2357A? Seeing anyone, we'll close the public hearing on 2357A. Open the work session on House Bill 2357A.
Mr. Chairman, move House Bill 2357A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Cruz moves House Bill 2357A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion?
Mr. Chair.
All right, Senator Burdick.
I would prefer to withhold action on this today. I think my concerns could be resolved if we could make it clear that only the people who qualify for this federal card can be wrapped into this bill. The way I heard the testimony, the people whose agencies don't allow a card like this would, under H.R. 218, they would be allowed to be wrapped into this bill with no training requirements, no background check requirements going into the future. So I would ask that we withhold this to see if we could work out a compromise to make sure that the people who are coming into our buildings and carrying concealed handgun licenses around are actually getting some kind of training and monitoring.
All right. I'm more than willing to hold it over. I will tell you, I think your interpretation of what I heard is different as to the requirements for a person to actually get the card and retain the card is not just issued by the fact that a person has retired in good standing, that they automatically get the card and they don't have to go through the training. That's what I heard, something different.
What I heard, Mr. Chair, is that the people who get the card, those are in one class of people, but there are a class of retired officers who do not get the card, and it's that class of officers that I'm concerned about.
Okay, well, Senator Thatcher.
I'm just in full support of this bill. It's similar to a bill I introduced in 2013 and want to see it move forward.
I'm a little confused. These are people that have been trained beyond levels that any civilian who gets a CHL will ever have. I don't understand what training it is that we're trying to make sure they have. I mean, these people have spent their life going over and over and over this stuff. I'm not understanding what training they need when they already are trained up to the max on the front end.
Mr. Chair, if I could respond to Senator Cruz, I totally agree. I would feel much safer in the presence of someone who had been through the law enforcement training. What I'm concerned about is an officer who retires, and that's when their training ends. And so, you know, 10 years down the road, any number of things can happen. They can lose their skills or whatever, and they can also commit crimes. And I don't see any protection in this bill for a law enforcement officer who retires and then commits a crime. And doesn't have one of these cards.
I'm throwing out the lifeline here. So, Mike and Jeff, thank you for coming back up. Did you want to try to respond to the concerns Senator Burdick has at this point?
I'll go first.
Okay.
Chair Brzezinski, members of the committee, Senator Burdick. This bill is just going to pull in retirees, and the goal of pulling them in is so they do not have to obtain an Oregon concealed weapons permit. That is it. They are not police officers. In fact, the recommendation commentaries from different police websites that I have read specifically say it is a personal choice for a retiree if they want to get involved in a life or death situation. There's no shame if you don't, and there's no shame if you do. It's a personal choice. So not all officers may even want to carry a weapon after 25 years. So that's the mindset going into this. The ultimate goal for this bill, though, is just to say, why are we making an officer with 25 years of experience have to go pay for an additional 3 hour of classroom-only instruction on how to carry a weapon? They've not only have the classroom instruction, many of them are instructors that teach everybody else to include civilians. That's what we're saying. H.R. 218 only convolutes the situation because what President Bush did was basically say, if you're a police officer, you can carry a gun, whether you're a retiree or you're a regular police officer in all 50 states, with the exception of federal buildings. That's essentially what the bill says. There are some recommendations on past practice on what you should consider if you're going to do this. So Jeff, for example, because the department doesn't give this Law Enforcement Safety Act card, they do give all retirees, though, ID cards signifying that they're a former employee with the Oregon State Police. So every retiree has an ID card given by the department. In essence, they could use that ID card and still comply with H.R. 218. And instead of trying to make this, well, we're going to try to line this bill up with H.R. 218, all we're saying is that if a retired officer retires honorably, whether it's a medical retirement after 7 years, but they can still shoot, it's not mental, they can't be high on drugs, they have to be in good standing. If they meet this criteria to carry a weapon in the state of Oregon, the same one that we give for concealed weapons permit, the retired officer, should be able to carry the weapon without having to go through a concealed weapons permit class.
And Mr. Chairman, I guess my question was, with a concealed handgun license, they have to be renewed every 3 years. And with the federal card, you say it has to be renewed every year.
The best practice is an annual qualification.
At this point, I'm more concerned about the background check safeguard than I am the training. I mean, these are highly trained people, and I'm sure the training lasts a long time. But with a concealed handgun license, every 3 years you get your background checked again. So if you've committed a crime, you cannot get your permit renewed. And I don't see any such safeguard in here for retired officers who might later go on to commit a crime. And so if I could see that, that would allay some of my concerns. I don't see any method for doing that.
Chair Brzezinski, Senator Burdick, are you saying that I know that we have the ability to do that? Would you want the bill to comply with the 3 years as an Oregon concealed weapons permit? Or are you saying every year upon requalification, they should have to go through another background?
I would feel much more comfortable if you had the regular schedule of background checks for eligibility for being included in this bill.
Annually or every 3 years?
I'd prefer annually, but every 3 years would comport with our concealed handgun license process.
Okay. If I might, Chair Brzezinski, members of the committee. Concealed handgun permits, I believe, are 5 years, not three. Clackamas County, I believe it's five. I could be mistaken, but I know it's longer than three.
There are a lot of four. Fingers with four.
Okay, four then. Four. Within that time, if I'm a concealed carry permit holder, within that time, if I commit a crime that precludes me from carrying a firearm, domestic abuse, let's say, they can ask for my permit back. They may send somebody out to get it, maybe not. Okay, I still have that in my possession. The only time we're going to find out that's an issue is if I'm stopped and they ask to see my permit, or I commit some other crime or do something wrong and a background is done at that time and that proves that I do not have either a valid permit or the right to carry. The same thing's going to be happening to a police officer if he is retired. If he has committed a crime, you are no longer in good standing as a retiree.
Let me ask another question, though. Through this process, when a retired officer has the HR 218, is there some notice or some type of acknowledgement in the comment field for their if the officer was pulled over for a traffic citation or whatever, that would note that you're just like someone's a concealed weapons permit holder? Would that also be somehow identified? Because what I'm getting at, it would seem to me that if there's a revocation of it, it's going to be flagged. Just like if someone loses a CHL, it's flagged. And so even though they may still have possession of that card because they haven't turned it in, it's still going to be known to everyone in law enforcement that that CHL card is no longer valid. So I wonder if there's any type of
Chair Przanski, members of the committee, to my knowledge, there is not. Like I said, some departments take a large responsibility in our HR 218. Others do not. Our department, at least you shouldn't say our department, the OSP, as far as I know, has no record of who's gone through HR 218 and who hasn't. And I only have records of those that go through my class. Others go to, some retirees from OSP, they go to other agencies like EPD if they can get in. So all we're asking is that you recognize our training, our experience. And I, like I said, I went through a concealed weapons class. For me, you know, there was nothing I learned there. And I just think that it's kind of redundant to you know, have a police officer go through a concealed weapons class.
Mr. Chair,
we're beyond that. You're talking about 218.
No, and I'm not really talking about the training. Would you feel comfortable with some provision in here so that some regular, at some interval, some background check information is acquired to determine whether someone still is eligible to qualify under this bill? That's what I'm concerned about, not the training.
Chair Przanski, members of the committee, I would only ask we be treated the same as anybody else with a concealed weapons permit. They're not required to have a background.
They actually are.
Every four years. You go in and pay them $15, and if you haven't been convicted of a crime, or $15 or $45, whatever, depending on the county, they give you a card.
Well, maybe we could hold it over, and I think there's a solution to this.
All right. Gentlemen, thank you very much.
Chair Przanski, members of the committee, thank you.
All right. Chair's going to do this. We will hold it over until first of next week. When are you back, Jeff?
I believe Tuesday.
This will be work sessions when we continue to Tuesday. We'll take care of it then.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right. So, Representative Post, I know that you have a time frame. I think I'm going to go ahead and open up the next hearing that you're here for to get your testimony so you can go on your way. So we're going to go ahead and open up a public hearing on House Bill 3093A for the purpose at this point to take Representative Post testimony, and then we will recess it and come back.
Chair Przanski and members of the committee, House Bill 3093A comes to us from Representative Post and Representative Bence. The bill provides persons licensed to carry a concealed handgun in another state the same protections afforded to persons with an Oregon concealed handgun permit, provided the issuing state handgun competency requirements are no less stringent than the Oregon requirements. The bill directs the Department of Justice to compile a list of eligible states and make the list available to law enforcement and the public. It specifies that the permit holder's home state must recognize an Oregon concealed carry permit for the law to apply. We have two amendments before us. First, the -A7 amendments adjust the language concerning eligibility requirements to encompass all of ORS 166291 and ORS 166292, which are the concealed handgun permitting laws, rather than just the handgun competency requirements contained in Section 1F. The proposed -A8 amendments provide that if a person is subject to a restraining order continued after a hearing in which there was actual notice and an opportunity to be heard, or a person is convicted of a qualifying misdemeanor against a family member, it is unlawful for the person to knowingly possess a firearm or ammunition. It defines family member and intimate partner and lays out parameters for restraining order findings.
All right. Thank you. Representative Post, thank you for being here.
Good morning, Chair Brzezinski and members of the committee. It's way different being over there and being over here, isn't it? It's unusual. You know, I don't want to take a lot of your time. I just kind of wanted to give a kind of a brief history of what I was looking for. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm always reprimanding people for the same thing, aren't I? I'm Bill Post. I'm a state representative from House District 25. Sorry. I wanted to give a quick history of what I was looking for here. You know, one of the things that I was looking forward to about coming into this building was the whole idea of a citizen legislature. And that would be me. I'm just a regular citizen in Oregon, and I try to think about things how folks out there would think. And one of the things I thought about for years was how, now the youth of this committee probably would not be a problem, but 40 years ago I got my driver's license. Now I don't know about you because you're all young folks, but 40 years ago I took a driver's test. I don't remember it for the most part. It was written, and then there was a driving part, but I'm still allowed to drive all the time, and I can come from another state and come into this state and carry that little Oregon driver's card and drive this dangerous weapon that is this 2,000-pound pickup truck that I have and plow through freeways and highways, and nobody ever asks me any questions. They just say, it's okay, because you took that test 40 years ago. Now, the argument would be you constantly practice by driving every day. So do concealed handgun license holders. They practice and they make sure that they're proficient in this particular tool. So for years, as I watched that, I thought that seems so common sense. You can drive a vehicle in from any other state and we recognize that. Why wouldn't we do the same for a concealed handgun license? And I urged my state representative, my state senator, to pass a CHL reciprocity bill, and they went some places, and sometimes they didn't go so well. And this particular one actually came about. I wrote a bill earlier that was a little more broad. Again, I was new to the process, and when I saw Representative Bence's bill, I said, "Now that's what I'm talking about. That's what I was looking for." So he was very kind and said, "You know what? Go with it. Run. It's yours, Representative Post." And so I did. And then we were very careful to make sure that we took care of some issues that I think that I didn't even think about. I went to Representative Jeff Barker, who is my judiciary chairman in the House, and talked to him. I said, what do you think? And he said, well, I'd like to do some changes here. And then I know he came over to Senator Brzezinski and talked to him. And I think we came up with some really good stuff. A couple of the parts that were really important was to take the onus off the state police and put it on the Department of Justice to screen the applicable states to make sure that they meet the criteria of Oregon's CHL statutes. And the other was that those other states would recognize our CHL here in Oregon. And so I felt really good about that. I was glad that we were able to work that together. And again, I was very grateful that Senator Brzezinski, that you worked so hard on that, because you worked a lot harder than I did, to tell you the truth. I just kind of wrote the bill. But I really appreciate what you guys have done. It passed unanimously out of the House Judiciary Committee. It was kind of funny that particular day that we heard it in here. It was towards the end of the deadline time, and things were going really fast. A couple of people that I knew were supporters got up and left and went to other meetings, and I went, oh boy, I'm in trouble. And yet it passed unanimously. And so I was really happy about that. And then it passed on the House floor 59-1, I think it was, or 58-1, because I think both sides of the aisle see the common sense of this, that we're just talking about people using something they've been licensed to use. So really, that's all I have. The only thing that I would add is on the -A7 amendment, I don't have a great objection to it. I would just want to make sure that it doesn't affect Oregon CHL holders in any way. I just kind of want to make sure that. I would like to be real clear on that. or change any restrictions in that way, make any restrictions in that way. But, you know, again, I just go back to the idea that there will be people coming into our state from out of state that shouldn't have a gun in Oregon. The way we wrote this so carefully with the Dash 1 and the Dash 2 amendments, I think that takes care of that situation. And so I really appreciate your hearing me on this and hope you have a great day.
Thank you. Questions? Representative, thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. I'm going to go ahead and recess this and go back to the other one because we got a lot more people who are going to be testifying on 3093. We'll go ahead and get the other one cleared since I only have one witness scheduled for that. So we'll recess 3093A, open up a public hearing on House Bill 2424A.
Chair Brzezinski and members of the committee, House Bill 2424A comes to us at the request of the governor for the Department of Corrections. The bill has a minimal fiscal and no revenue impact and was unanimous off both the committee and floor on the House side. The bill allows an authorized staff member of the Department of Corrections, State Board of Parole and Post-Prison Supervision, and Oregon Corrections Enterprises assigned to work in a department building to store a personal handgun and ammunition in their vehicle if certain conditions are met. It defines vehicle to include a motorcycle, passenger car, van, or truck, as well as soft-top convertible and Jeep. The bill provides that the department does not have a duty to inspect or secure vehicles or parking areas or to determine staff compliance with the law. It directs the department to adopt written policies or rules to regulate the possession and storage of personal handguns and ammunition.
All right, thank you. Leonard, why don't you go ahead and come forward while Mr. Williamson's coming forward. Is anyone else who wants to testify today on 2424A? When you're ready.
Chair Brzezinski, Vice Chair Cruz, other members of the committee, my name is Leonard Williamson. I'm the Inspector General for the Oregon Department of Corrections. Previously before the committee gave testimony on House Bill 4035, which was the predecessor to the current bill. The Department of Corrections views this as an agency cleanup bill. We have worked closely with labor between sessions at the request of the governor's office. Labor has joined us in the recommendations in this bill, and it does three essentially important things. It establishes some fairness with respect to our employees. The prior bill only targeted our security series staff. This bill applies to all of our employees. As the committee knows, we have folks that start out in the security series, move to other series within the department. That doesn't mean that they're in any less danger from inmates later on if they're traveling from home to work. Second, this better defines vehicle and excludes things like bicycles. We weren't quite sure, based on the prior definition, how some of that would work.
Derringers.
Yeah. Probably pick up the bicycle and the lockbox at the same time. And third, we had wanted to work with the Department of Justice around some agency liability language to kind of contain the not just the agency's liability, but the state of Oregon's liability should someone not secure properly in their vehicle in a parking lot. I think this addresses some of that language and cleans that up. And while it's not part of my written testimony that I submitted, I would like to acknowledge that one of our labor partners, AOCE, donated a significant amount of money to help us purchase lock box secure devices at both the penitentiary and OSCI. So if the committee has any questions, I can answer those.
Thank you. Any questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have one question. To me, this looks like it would just confer to your employees the same rights that any citizen would have to take their gun into a workplace.
Chair Brzezinski, Senator Burdick, an ordinary citizen with a carry conceal permit could not bring a firearm onto our property at all. It would be considered contraband and subject to felony prosecution. So presently, even ammunition, which was not included in the prior bill, is contraband and subject to felony prosecution. So unless you do this, you can't exempt them from the other criminal statute.
Mr. Chair, would this apply to all of your employees or just those that have concealed handgun license?
It would, Senate Chair Przanski, Senator Burke, it would apply to any employee that has a valid concealed carry permit.
Okay. So being legally qualified to own a gun would not be enough. They'd have to take the extra step of having a concealed handgun license?
Chair Przanski, Senator Burdick, that's correct. I would also mention that annually, as part of any employee's performance evaluation or performance review, we run another background check on that employee. That doesn't have anything to do with being a carry conceal permit holder. It has everything to do with federal requirements under PREA in terms of the Prison Rape Elimination Act to ensure that our employees don't have convictions that would keep them from supervising inmates.
Okay. So I presume that if under your rulemaking, if someone did show up with a criminal conviction, you wouldn't any longer allow them to bring guns onto the property?
Chair Przanski, Senator Burdick, the operation of what you just described would have to come from the sheriff's department that issued the permit. Mm-hmm. They'd have to revoke the permit or temporarily suspend it. And what we would do is notify the sheriff's office of the permit holder about the problem.
Thank you very much.
Yes.
All right. Any other questions?
Stop.
Okay.
It's a sign. It's a sign.
It is. Hallelujah.
Okay,
so we will close that public hearing, and we're going to open up a work session on House Bill 2424A. Senator Cruz.
Can I move House Bill 2424A to the floor with a due pass recommendation?
Senator Cruz moves House Bill 2424A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion.
Hallelujah.
No, that's not quite yet. We're getting there.
Okay.
Since I feel like God is signed from heaven, I'll be a yes on this.
All right. And any objection to the motion that's before us? Not seeing any, we'll pass. The chair will carry 2424A to the floor, and we'll close the work session on House Bill 2424A. We're going to come back out of recess on House Bill 3093A to continue our testimony. And Roger, where's Roger?
He escaped.
Oh, he did escape. Okay, so I'm looking at who has signed up for four, and it's Kevin Sterick and Adam Maxey. Want you to come forward. And Roger signed up.
He's in a meeting.
Okay. Who would like to start?
For the record, Kevin Starrett, Oregon Firearms Federation. Mr. Beyer asked me to inform you that NRA would be supporting the bill in its original form and to be opposed to the amendments that we've seen so far, the 7 and the 8s. There is.
Roger, excellent.
No.
We just started, and so Kevin just gave his name, and we're going to take his testimony, but he was filling in for you. So I was going to ask, because on the form you didn't say for or against. I assume you were for the bill, but it sounds like maybe you're for part of the bill or the original bill. So, Kevin, can you hold off on this?
Absolutely.
Go ahead and get Roger, since we started with your testimony without you being here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Roger Beyer here, representing the National Rifle Association. I did not testify or check for or against the original bill as it came over. The NRA is supportive of that measure. There is a -A7 and a -A8 amendments. The A7 amendments, I think I need to look into a little further. I think potentially the attempt is to I'm not sure what the attempt is. I didn't hear the hopefully the council explained it a little bit, and I apologize for that. I had to go to an appointment. But we felt the bill as it came from the House was crafted in such a way that it would be very clear what the requirements are that the other states would have to meet and not be at the discretion of the Department of Justice to determine if the other states are standards are sufficient to meet Oregon's. The thought was to put Oregon standards in the bill so everyone knows what they are, and therefore it would be very easy for the Department of Justice to determine without using discretion as to whether or not the state standards meet Oregon standards. That was the attempt. If that's what the amendment continues to do, I don't think we would be opposed to that. Just a concern, just not knowing the exact language and not have a chance to study it completely yet at this point in time. The A8 amendments, which were posted this morning, NRA has no comment on those.
Can I just ask for a clarification?
You may.
Thank you. So I had heard before you came in that you supported the underlying bill but were opposed to the 7s and the 8s, but I'm hearing you say you don't know yet where you are on the 7s and 8s, and you're not registering opposition to the 7s and 8s.
Mr. Chair and Senator Gelser, I can speak directly to the 8s. We have no position on the 8s. We're not opposed. We're not supportive. We have no comments to make on the dash 8s. The dash 7s, as I read them, I would be opposed to the dash 7s, but I was hoping to hear the discussion from council. I'd ask Representative Post to ask the question if whether or not they changed the original bill in any manner, and unfortunately I wasn't able to get that. I can go back and listen to that testimony later, Mr. Rose would be willing to give it now. But if they change the bill and give more discretion to the Department of Justice on determining whether or not the requirements, we would be opposed to that. We like the original bill where it's very clear, very laid out, and there's no discretion required by the Department of Justice.
Thank you for the clarification.
Okay, so we're going to take a station break here and go to our staff and council. And Jeff, why don't you go ahead and give the summary as you understand the dash A7s.
Certainly, Chair Brzezinski and members of the committee, the dash A7 amendments are meant to capture portions of 166291 that aren't necessarily specific to handgun competency. So the bill 3093A coming over from the House side dealt with subsection F, which just deals with handgun competency. That section was, in essence, copied and pasted into the bill, as you said, to make sure that there's compliance exactly with those requirements for Oregon standards. There are other requirements in 166291, however, such as you have to be at least 21 years of age, have to be a citizen of the United States, you have to have no outstanding warrants for arrest. Those aspects are not captured within the bill as it came over from the House. The A7 amendments are meant to capture every single requirement in 166291 to make certain that every single thing is adhered to in order for another state to qualify for reciprocity in our state.
All right.
Hopefully that makes sense.
So, Roger, I don't know if you were here at the beginning. When I opened up the committee for today, I made note that 3093A was not going to be moved today. So there's going to be some opportunity for you to do a little bit more research or background gathering, and then but I wanted to get that on the record at this point. So did you have other comments at this point, or did you want to hold off?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think I will hold on any other comments at this point in time until I have a chance to look more closely at that the requirements.
All right. Okay. So I think, Roger, you're done at this point? All right. Kevin, you signed in. Why don't you do it one more time, please?
Yeah. We support the original bill. The dash 7 amendments, the concern I would have with them, and I understand what the purpose is to capture the 21-year-old issue, all of those things. Where I'd have a problem is if it doesn't simply lay out those requirements, as Roger and I worked on putting the Oregon requirements for training directly into the bill, so there would be no question about who did and did not comply. It appears that the dash 7s are going to leave it up to the Department of Justice to make a decision about whether or not these other states meet all these requirements. And if that's the case, that would be our concern. At one time, the Oregon State Police had the authority to recognize other states' permits if they decided those other states' requirements were substantially similar to ours. And they never accepted a single state. And I wouldn't want to have the Department of Justice be in the position of having to make a decision about that based on their interpretation of the stringency of other states' requirements. So if that was written in a way that just delineated what those requirements are. For example, added to it that the person must be 21 years of age. Whatever other issues that are of concern here, that would be fine. But what I would not want to see is that a department didn't get direct guidance about exactly what those requirements are. Because as I said, in the past, when a department had that authority, didn't recognize. I mean, I came here with the New York City pistol permit, and let me tell you, you don't get those very easily. They didn't recognize it. And if it was crafted in a way that made that quite clear what those requirements are, in addition to the training requirements, the age requirement, that kind of thing, I think that would make perfect sense. As far as the Dash 8s, we would oppose the Dash 8s unequivocally. This is obviously a stuff of 525. And 525 was brought to you. Virtually everybody who testified in favor of 525 said that it was necessary because we're not allowed to enforce federal law. And that is simply false. And I cannot understand how so many people in the legal profession are under that impression. It is unequivocally not true. Our law enforcement can enforce federal law. 525 and the language that's being stuffed into this is entirely unnecessary. So we would oppose that.
All right. Thank you. I appreciate that because we had gotten word that OFF was standing down or was neutral on the amendment that's now the A8, which is the 525. So thank you for putting that on the record. So, but I do want to ask, just because I just want to follow up, the reason that the A7s have the actual statutes that are in there, 166.291 and 166.292, knowing that there are sometimes going to be modifications to those through, let's say, future legislation, that we would have the same statute requirements to be complied with. And so long as it's articulated in the statute for each of those 0.291 and 0.292, I'm not sure what the benefit would be to delineate each of those elements or points that are made within those two statutes into a longer form, because then it would require any time those two statutes are changed to have to come back and then change this statute as well. So to me, it seems like it's still a very bright line, because it tells us that people have to meet and comply with what they're going to be looking at anyway, whether it's written out item by item or just the statute, because each of those statutes have item by item. So,
Mr. Chair, as I'm looking at the amendment, I get the concern, and I've got to do some more research, I guess, is the use of the sufficient stringency language, whether or not that gives the Department of Justice more legal wiggle room as to whether they can look at that and say, well, we don't know that is sufficiently stringent as per Oregon 166, 291, and 292. And that is the concern. It's that term. It used to, as Kevin stated, it used to say substantially similar when the state police had the authority, which is a lower bar, I think, than sufficiently stringent. But that's the terminology, I think, that gives me pause on the A7s.
Okay. Thank you. Adam?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Adam Maxey testifying on behalf of Oregon Gun Owners. We have not had a chance to take a position on any amendments, but we support the underlying bill and have supported reciprocity efforts in the past. 14 other states practice conditional reciprocity. So it's somewhat of common practice for other states to do this. And CHL holders, by definition, are law-abiding citizens, and law-abiding gun owners should be afforded protections available through this legislation, and we support the bill.
All right. Thank you. All right. Other testimony? Just want to make certain before I ask for other questions, I just want to clarify those other points. All right. Questions? Comments? Gentlemen, thank you very much. All right. With that done, I'm going to just start at the top. Paul Kemp, Tom O'Connor, and Jake Weigler. Gentlemen, thank you for being here. Whoever would like to start, give us your name first, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Tom O'Connor. I'm a lifelong gun owner and native Oregonian. I'm here today because I'm concerned about firearm safety, particularly with regard to concealed weapons carried in public places. House Bill 3093 is apparently intended to permit residents of other states with a concealed handgun license from that state to carry a concealed weapon in Oregon if the other state has license requirements equal to Oregon's. I agree that the Dash 7 amendment is necessary to make it clear that all of Oregon's requirements must be met. I just saw the Dash 8 amendment, so I can't say much at this point except they look like a good idea to me. However, my main concern with House Bill 3093 is it puts the cart before the horse. Before we bring in a whole new group of out-of-state gun owners, I believe we need to clearly understand the privileges and exemptions those folks would be entitled to under current Oregon law and whether Oregon's existing licensing requirements need to be strengthened. Current Oregon law provides Oregon CHL holders with what I would call a sort of a golden ticket. Current Oregon law allows Oregon CHL holders to carry their loaded firearms into schools, universities, public buildings, and other public spaces. This bill, therefore, opens the door to out-of-state CHL holders to carry their loaded firearms into those same schools, universities, and public spaces. It increases the risk to the public and to law enforcement from accidental or purposeful gun violence just by sheer numbers alone. If this bill is to move and allow out-of-state CHL holders to carry loaded firearms in Oregon, I would urge you to consider amending it to strengthen our existing CHL process to include something like the following firearm safety measures. One, add a requirement for in-person training or live fire experience and perhaps the basics of dealing with potentially violent confrontations. Two, require a showing of just cause and give local law enforcement, who know the local community the best, discretion to issue or revoke CHLs based upon some sort of minimum state standards. And finally, prohibit the carrying of loaded firearms in schools, universities, and public buildings. These amendments would help reduce the risk to the public and to law enforcement, but would not impact the use of firearms for hunting, target shooting, or personal protection in the home. Thank you.
Thank you. Who's next?
Thank you, Chairman Brzezinski and members of the committee for holding this important hearing, for giving me an opportunity to share my story. My name is Paul Kemp, but I think each of you were given a copy of this, and I think it would be beneficial as I'm reading it to look particularly at some of the screenshots, because that'll help with my message. I'm a gun owner. I don't have a CHL. But I have taken the necessary class required in Oregon to get a CHL. I have several friends who have had a CHL for years. Over the last few years, I've appeared before this committee advocating for more comprehensive background check laws. Fortunately, today I'm here to relate a personal experience with a CHL holder. I hope you're able to bring a copy of my testimony so you can see the series of screenshots that were threatening and posted on social media. So in figure one, getting my concealed license in 2 weeks. Who wants to get shot? Figure two, I got my twin Glocks cocked back. The second page. Screw it then. Go on a shooting spree. Figure four, I want like 10 guns, not satisfied with just one. And then the picture on the second page is the young man standing there pointing his Glock at the camera in a hoodie and a face mask. It's hard to tell, but there's a picture on the right-hand side. That's my daughter on the right-hand side. This series of screenshots was from my daughter's ex-high school boyfriend. My daughter called me. She was obviously and rightfully very upset after she saw these messages posted on social media. These screenshots were from messages Kyle sent in the fall of 2012, a few months before the Clackamas Town Center shooting. I called Clackamas County Sheriff's Office, who issued Kyle a CHL, to see if they would revoke the CHL based on these public threats, threatening messages he sent out for all to see. The Sheriff's Office would not revoke Kyle's CHL. The permit is good for 4 years in Clackamas County. I asked them if they would not renew the CHL after the initial permit expired. They had no answer. I emailed these to the sheriff's office for future reference in the event he did shoot someone, specifically my daughter. She was at the University of Oregon at the time. I emailed these to the Eugene police and the campus police at the University of Oregon. Kyle was never a student at the University of Oregon, so they really had no jurisdiction. The Clackamas County Sheriff's Office would not do anything, as Kyle had not physically attacked my daughter. He had just made numerous threats to harm her. The most ironic thing about the CHL permit process in Clackamas County, it is the same place they sent Carla Forsyth, my sister, her daughter Katie, and me after I picked them up outside the Clackamas Town Center the afternoon of the Clackamas Town Center mall shooting. The building we met, the Trauma Intervention Program volunteers and police chaplains, is the Public Safety Center and Indoor Firing Range located at 12700 Southeast 82nd Avenue in Clackamas, Oregon. This is the facility is just a few blocks west of the Clackamas County Sheriff's Office on Sunnybrook and just a short distance from the Clackamas Town Center Mall itself. This is also the office that Clackamas County issues CHLs from. So while we waited for 4.5 hours to find out about the status of Steve, Carla's husband, whether he was okay, injured, or dead, I was able to talk with the issuing CHL officers and press my case to have Kyle's CHL permit revoked. I don't know which state's House Bill 3093 is set to work with, but this is one example of why I think HB 3093 is a bad idea. When I can't even get my home state county sheriff who issued the permit to do anything against someone making public threats, there's something wrong. I sent Kyle's own words and photos to Rose Parkhill at the Clackamas County Sheriff's Office. Her reply to me is below, between the dashed lines. If you notice, her reply is 4 hours before the Clackamas Town Center shooting that day. Since Clackamas County Sheriff's Office was unwilling or unable to act on my request to revoke Kyle's CHL, I contacted his father, Lou. I sent Lou the screenshots you've seen here. I did not know if Lou talked to his son, Kyle, or not about these social media threats he made. However, I felt helpless to protect my daughter against these threats. We are one family out of thousands here in Oregon who, in the span of a few months, had our lives affected by instances of gun violence threats and a murder. No one in our family is involved in crime, the drug trade, street gangs, or trafficking guns. We actually lead a quite normal and many would say boring life in the suburbs. How many other Oregon families have had similar experiences I've described here? Is there some overwhelming benefit to the Oregon citizens with the passage of HB 3093? I and many others would like to know how Oregonians will benefit from the passage of this bill. I would urge the Oregon legislature to strengthen Oregon's current CHL requirements to include justification warning a CHL, in other words, good cause for a CHL. Give local authorities discretion for issuing a CHL. Allow local authorities the ability to revoke a CHL for behavior such as that noted above. Add a live fire training requirement demonstrating safe handling of the applicant's gun. Deny a CHL applicant if they have been convicted of violent or firearm-related misdemeanor, including assault, battery, and unlawful possession of firearm. The CHL applicant must own the gun used in live fire training. And lastly, prohibit the carrying of loaded firearms in schools, universities, public parks, and government buildings. I urge you to vote no on HB 3093 unless reciprocity is granted to CHL holders from states with equal or more stringent requirements than Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you. Jake?
Chair Brzezinski, members of the committee, my name is Jake Weigler. I'm here on behalf of the Oregon Alliance for Gun Safety. The Alliance works with over 50 organizations across Oregon committed to passing common sense gun legislation that will slow the epidemic of gun violence in Oregon. I'm here today to testify in opposition to House Bill 3093A engrossed, although I also support the -A7s and -A8s. This morning, you will receive written and verbal testimony from our partners regarding several concerns with the current version of the bill. With time today, I wanted to briefly summarize what we see as those key concerns. First, any discussion of reciprocity should begin with the expectation that we will not allow a CHL holder from another state to carry a concealed weapon if that individual would not be able to obtain such a license if they're an Oregonian. In other words, we should not authorize visitors to carry a concealed weapon in public if that state does not have at least as stringent CHL requirements as we do. The legislation section 1 would require only that other states grant reciprocity to Oregon CHL holders and B, require its licensees to have undergone a firearm safety or training course. As is detailed in the written testimony provided by the Law Center to Prevent Gun Violence, the A engrossed, as currently drafted, would allow individuals to carry concealed carry in Oregon, even if they were a registered sex offender from Nevada, domestic abusers with multiple arrests but no convictions from Nebraska, 18-year-olds with outstanding warrants from Maine, stalkers with misdemeanor convictions from South Carolina, or people with past violent behavior who present a danger to themselves or others from Kentucky. In other words, those states do not have those restrictions, but Oregon does. We're glad to see the -A7 amendments address the concern, support their adoption. With regards to the concerns stated by the Firearms Federation and the NRA, I think that we would be amenable to having the requirements explicitly laid out in the statute versus the sufficiently stringent standard that is set forward in the A7. Obviously, we appreciate the chair's concern that that would require more work to reconcile them with future changes to CHL requirements, but we would be fine with removing that discretion from the agency. Second, the committee should recognize the responsibility this legislation will place upon local law enforcement to properly enforce reciprocity requirements, whether in the current form or the more stringent requirements outlined in the -A7 amendments. DOJ is responsible for tracking legislation in 49 other states and whether their criteria meets Oregon's. It's noteworthy that multiple states do not currently recognize Oregon CHL because of our lack of reciprocity, presumably a situation they would address with the passage of this legislation. And that would then, of course, have to require updates of our information. And the responsibility for knowing this information will ultimately end up on the shoulders of an officer or deputy who is asked to determine whether an individual with a gun in a school or a city building is allowed to carry because their CHL from Kentucky or Maine is valid here. And think about the burdens that will place on local law enforcement. The third concern is it's worth emphasizing that adding more concealed firearms to public places does not contribute to public safety. Determining when to use deadly force is a tough decision for trained officers of the law, and civilians using weapons risk injuring bystanders or being shot accidentally by responding law enforcement. This committee in 2013 considered strengthening CHL requirements to include live fire training. There's also House legislation that's been introduced this session that would require a federal NICS check before obtaining a CHL in Oregon. We should focus on strengthening our own requirements before establishing the standard for visitors to concealed carry in the state. I would also add that we would encourage the committee to consider adding the language, who is not prohibited from possessing a firearm, in sections 3 through 8 of the bill as it appears in section 2. The language is some reason omitted in those other sections is not in section 2. Finally, this is not on my written testimony, but I'll remark that the -8s, although we've not had a chance to review them in detail, we've supported that concept in other legislation and would be supportive of adoption of those amendments as well. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Questions? Comments? Gentlemen, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next individuals I have is Penny Okamoto and Elise Gettier. Those are the last two I have scheduled, or at least signed up. While they're coming up, is there anyone else who would want to give testimony on House Bill 3093A? Sybil, why don't you go ahead and come on up? Who'd like to start?
I'll start. Thank you very much. Excuse me. Chair Przanski, members of the Senate Judiciary Committee, I'm Penny Okamoto. I'm the Executive Director of Ceasefire Oregon. Thank you very much for taking my testimony today. Ceasefire Oregon has worked for 15 years to reduce gun violence in Oregon, and we oppose the original bill of 3093A. The original bill would allow poorly trained out-of-state CHL holders to carry loaded hidden guns on Oregon streets, in our parks, and even in our public schools. I'd like to say that I think that there has been a lot of confusion and misunderstanding about this bill. I think that on the surface it looks pretty calm, but underneath there are a lot of problems with this bill. While HB 3093 would require states to have handgun competency similar to Oregon's, not only are Oregon's CHL training laws quite lax, I also need to add that CHLs across the states are not like driver's license. They are not uniform the way driver's licenses are throughout the United States. Let me give you an example of the CHL's applicant. An Oregon CHL applicant is not required to undergo live fire shooting exercises. Even Texas requires shooting competency, as do six other states. Furthermore, CHL requirement trainings do not include instruction techniques for avoiding a criminal attack or how to manage a violent confrontation or conflict resolution, as other states do, including Delaware. While the vast majority of gun owners are extremely responsible, a CHL is not a guarantee of lawful behavior. This is not a case of the best having a CHL. According to the Violence Policy Center, 743 people have been shot to death by someone legally permitted to carry a concealed gun, and that's just since 2007. In addition, 29 mass shootings have been committed by CHL holders, and 17 law enforcement officers have been killed by CHL holders. Florida, which could possibly be eligible for reciprocity, issued 1,400 concealed carry permits to felons in 2007 alone. Between 2007 and 2011, North Carolina, another state which could be eligible, issued 2,400 concealed carry permits to people convicted of misdemeanor crimes or felonies. Furthermore, Ceasefire Oregon has concerns about the implementation and maintenance of the reciprocity data from other states. HB 3093 would require the laws of all other states to be examined yearly to determine if changes have been made to those laws that would make a state eligible or ineligible for reciprocity with Oregon. That burden would fall on the Department of Justice, and the cost would ultimately be borne by the Oregon taxpayer. In addition to the list of states with reciprocity agreements, Oregon will also need a database of all CHL holders in the United States. For example, if an armed driver is stopped by an Oregon police officer and a driver presents a paper a CHL from another state, how is a police officer to know that that license is legitimate and that state actually is a state that we have reciprocity with? The officer will need to rely on a database of all CHL holders in the United States. Who is going to implement and maintain that database? The Department of Justice? Whoever does it, again, the cost will be borne by the Oregon taxpayer. And remember that a CHL database would need to be constantly updated to reflect new CHL holders from other states, as well as those non-residents who have had their CHLs revoked. Again, a cost that will fall on the Oregon taxpayer. I would like to add here, it's not my written testimony, that a very similar bill, HB 2415, was introduced in 2011 and didn't even make a hearing in the House committee because of fiscal issues. I do believe, with all due respect, that some people have misunderstood or underestimated the fiscal cost of this bill. So in addition, how often will the Department of Justice be updated about the status of CHL holders in other states? How will that information be conveyed? How will disputes be handled if someone disagrees with the Department of Justice's decision about another state's reciprocity status? And additionally, how will non-residents know Oregon laws concerning concealed carry? How are we going to be assured that they have read our information and know the laws? Will all Oregon public schools be required to post signs stating that non-resident as well as Oregon concealed handgun license holders are welcome to carry their loaded hidden Glocks right into the classrooms? How helpful will this bill be to Oregonians? California does not have a reciprocity, so Oregon doesn't have reciprocity with California. That's not going to happen. Washington would not be eligible for reciprocity because Washington does not require training to obtain a CHL. In addition, residents of other states bordering Oregon can already obtain a CHL from an Oregon sheriff. If we move forward with this bill, Ceasefire Oregon would only be able to support this bill if we increased the training requirements similar to what Delaware has, and if we removed some of the locations where CHLs could be carried. For example, some of the Delaware requirements are demonstration and use of instruction and use of force, nonviolent dispute resolution, handgun use, safe proper storage, and more. Also, we would require live fire training similar to what Delaware or Texas has. In addition, we would like to see CHL holders not be able to carry concealed hidden guns into our schools and into our Capitol buildings
into this Capitol building, among other places. Ceasefire Oregon does support the Dash 7 amendments, and we do support the Dash 8 amendments at this time. So Ceasefire Oregon will only support this bill if we have greater restrictions on where CHL can be carried, on the training that is going to be required for CHL, and if we include the Dash 7 and Dash 8 amendments. Thank you very much for your time.
All right. Elise.
Chair Przanski, committee members, my name is Elise Gauthier. Until last year, I served for many years as president of Ceasefire Oregon. Today, however, I testify as an individual since I am no longer president of that organization. I do have, however, 15 years' experience analyzing Oregon firearms laws in order to promote gun safety in the state. This bill, if enacted, will undermine public safety in Oregon. First, after reviewing the proceedings and materials in the House on this bill, I think it is obvious that many House members who voted yes expected that concealed carry permits from other states would be honored only if they were had standards no less stringent than Oregon's. As has been discussed, that's not what this bill provides. Of the 15 requirements listed in 166-291, this bill would require out-of-state people to only meet one of them, the handgun competency requirement. Also, as has been pointed out, when you look at the bill, in Section 2, it provides that the non-resident CHL holders being granted the specified privilege must not be prohibited from possessing a firearm. I do not understand why that phrase was omitted from the same new paragraph in sections 3-8 of the bill, and I think it needs to be added there as well. Under the A7s, out-of-staters would have to meet all of the requirements, and the sufficiently stringent term is used, of course, in the event that a state's requirements are more stringent. That's okay. Theirs would be honored as well. However, as you know, the standards and procedures that other states use to issue concealed carry permits vary widely, and there's extensive evidence showing that states do make mistakes. Therefore, to achieve the amendment's goal, the bill should explicitly state that Oregon does not grant reciprocity to any permit held by a person who is prohibited from possessing a firearm under federal law. This bill also does not set adequate administrative standards for the issuance of CHLs by other states. The standards by which the states issue, report, and revoke the permits are an essential component of reciprocity, one that is critical to the safety of Oregonians and Oregon law enforcement officers. Oregon requires sheriffs to conduct, quote, any investigation necessary, close quote, to corroborate that the applicant meets the requirements of our statute. Sheriffs are also required to enter applications for CHLs into the LED system. And it's my understanding that law enforcement can quickly verify the validity of a CHL almost instantly. But that's not true of all other states. Background check requirements vary significantly, as do the systems for confirming validity. According to a 2012 report by the U.S. Government Accountability Office, for example, the validity of permits issued by Georgia and Maryland could be verified only by calling the issuing authority during normal working hours, Monday to Friday, 8 to 5. This bill, even as amended by A7, does not require the reciprocal states to have permit issuance, verification, and revocation procedures that are comparable to Oregon's. Therefore, I would urge you to write in the bill that the other states' licensing process must include a NICS check. And the bill should also provide that the issuing state must provide the means for Oregon law enforcement to instantly verify that the permit is still valid and the system should be available 24 hours a day. The Government Accounting Office, the Government Accountability Office estimates that there are more than 8 million concealed carry permits in the United States. Currently, only about 200,000, I don't have the exact number, are issued by Oregon. under this bill, even as amended, you would extend concealed carry reciprocity to an unknown number, but at least 7,800,000 people, inviting them to bring their loaded guns into our taverns, parks, public elementary schools, and this building without requiring them to meet our standards. Therefore, I urge a no vote on this bill. Thank you.
Questions?
Well, just one comment. I really do. Memory serves me. I don't think that out-of-state people would be protected in carrying their guns in Oregon schools. Oregon people can, but I don't think people from out-of-state would be protected. Maybe we can double-check that.
Mr. Chair, they would under the bill.
Under the bill, I think they would.
I don't think they would, but anyway. Well, we can maybe make that more explicit.
That'd be nice
if you'd
to
like.
See that as to where there is, isn't. At least it seemed like in listening to the testimony, you went back and forth as to what the original bill covers versus what with the A7s. The last part kind of confused me because it sounded like you went back to what the original bill said. So have you done an analysis and revised your testimony based on if the A7s were adopted? Because that does, in fact, call out a lot of stuff you said needs to be called out.
I don't support reciprocity because it will greatly increase the number of guns on our streets, and it relies on other states to correctly administer the CHL process.
Okay.
If you are going to adopt the amendment and allow reciprocity, I would urge you to include two provisions. The other state's licensing process must include a NICS check to ensure that prohibited purchasers can't obtain the other state's CHL, and the issuing state must provide the means for Oregon law enforcement to instantly know whether that permit is still valid, because how the state administers this process is critical to ensuring that it is least as stringent as ours.
Okay. Thank you. All right. We're almost out of time. And Sybil?
Thank you, Chair Przanski. Members of the committee, I'm sorry, when I came up originally, I'd forgotten to carry with me some paperwork. This is Sybil Hebb with the Oregon Law Center. We do not have a position on the underlying bill or any of the amendments other than the A8. And just for the record, I wanted to clarify that the A8 amendments are the language that is compromise language that was developed as an amendment to Senate Bill 525, which was heard in your committee earlier this session. The compromise amendments to Senate Bill 525 are the A4s, and the A8s, as best I can tell reading through them, are an exact replica of what that compromise was. And we really appreciate the efforts of all of the folks who put time and effort into crafting that compromise language, specifically the Senate President's Office and Anna Braun and the Republican Leadership Office and Steve Elzinga. Very much appreciate that. Those amendments are drafted based on the federal law, which has been in place since the mid-1990s under the Violence Against Women Act, which and they track them almost exactly. The federal law was passed in recognition of the fact that there is such a huge overlap between domestic violence deaths and guns in the home of perpetrators who have been adjudicated by the courts. And so that's how the law applies, and this amendment would implement that law in Oregon. And to answer a question that was raised earlier is that we are at this point in time in Oregon without any state laws that track the federal laws, without the capacity to enforce those laws effectively. Many other states have struggled with this dilemma, and 40 states approximately, I think it's 41 actually, have taken steps to address that issue, and we would like Oregon to do similarly. There are, as you may know, 14 ATF officers in the state of Oregon. They are not practically effectively able to be in our communities across the state responding to 911 calls. They're not the ones who are responding to domestic violence calls. And our state prosecutors, as you know, of course, may only bring cases based on state law. And so that's what this is designed to address. And we very much appreciate your time and attention to this and hope that we can see this concept move forward. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions? All right. Thank you very much. We're closing the public hearing on House Bill 3093A, and we are going to be back on Monday at 8:30, if I remember correctly. So we're adjourned.